Toronto! I wonder if they can hear it on Long Island.
Great move. What a goal. Beauty. Austin Matthews.
Bless you, boys. What a game.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Maple Leafs Hot Stove Podcast. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Anthony Petrielli. Anthony, we are talking about a three-game stretch since we last spoke, and I think overall you might say it was a negative three-game stretch for the Maple Leafs, but as we record, we are coming off a pretty impressive victory for Toronto. So I think we'll start there with takeaways from Wednesday's game, where you know, you saw Matthews get back on track. You saw some stuff from Max Domi on the first line. A little bit of line switching throughout. So, he had Pontus Holmberg on the third line center spot, but things changed throughout the game. So we can be a little bit positive off the top before we dig into some of the issues surrounding the Maple Leafs. What were a few takeaways you had from Wednesday night?
Honestly, my main takeaway is Washington is terrible. And...
That's fair.
People are talking about expansion and expanding the playoff format and play-in tournaments. Like, Washington sucks. I have no interest in watching them play in the playoffs. Like, none. Like, Philly, for that matter, as well. Like, I don't really want... Like, I really respect what Philly's done, and I like watching them from the point of view that I think they work their bags off and they get as much out of their roster as humanly possible. But... from the perspective of like being a good hockey team, I have no interest in watching like a Philadelphia Carolina series. I have no interest in watching Washington play Florida or Boston. And I'll circle this back to the Leafs in the sense that in the very beginning of the season, I wrote that I thought that they really should win the division this year. I thought Boston, in fairness, would take a big step back. I wasn't entirely sold on Florida, and in the sense that I was sold on their roster, but I wasn't really sold on Bobrovsky being the guy. And he's absolutely been the guy this year. So, good for him. Florida's been excellent as a result. But when I talked about winning the division, people were like, I don't care about the divisions, playoffs. That's all that matters. They could do anything. You could be playing the Washington Capitals in the first round. Like, do you care now? Because you are staring at Boston, Florida, pretty much guaranteed. And you could have played the Washington Capitals. And it just made me watch and go, like, thank God you couldn't beat Columbus all season. Thank God you couldn't beat Chicago all season. Like, you gave away points against terrible hockey teams all season long. And as a result, you're now staring down a gauntlet of a path to the conference finals instead of what should have been a breeze.
I think that's part of the Leafs story that isn't talked about enough, to be honest, is their failure to win the division in these seasons where they've had the first round flameouts. Like, there's all this discussion of the Maple Leafs have been a fantastic regular season team, but they can't get it done in the postseason. And there's truth that in terms of raw point totals, but because they keep failing to win the division, they set themselves up with incredibly difficult first round opponents. Now, should they have won more than they have in the postseason based on the talent available to them? Absolutely. But it is meaningful to set yourself up for easier opponents in the first round and then potentially having home ice advantage later on. Although we know that the Leafs haven't been fantastic at home this year by any stretch of the imagination, it is still better to force your opponent to do the travel, to do the unfamiliarity and get out of their routine and all that jazz. So this is just another season where I don't know if that opportunity is there for them because Florida's been really, really good. And Boston, they have so many overtime shootout losses. They're probably not quite as good as their point total suggests. But is there another world where they beat, Ottawa a few more times and Columbus and they win this division? I'm not quite sure. I just think Florida is a better team than them by a relatively notable margin.
And Florida and Boston are legitimately 1-2 right now in points percentage, like as we record. So it's not framed in the sense that, like, what a joke. I can't believe they couldn't win this division because this is the hardest division in the NHL to win. I mean, you have...
And it has been a lot of the time in this era.
But I think they could have given themselves a better chance of making this a real conversation. Of course, part of that is you can't get swept by Boston. It's not just giving away the points against the Chicagos and Columbuses of the world. It's not just getting obliterated 9-3 to Buffalo, of which I've very much circled that game on my calendar for next Saturday, because to me, there's unfit. Like, we talked so much about sense of occasion and the team like showing things. And that Saturday game to me is like, you're going back to Buffalo where they absolutely hammered you. And we heard like every player's individual goal song, including like the High School Musical one from Jeff Skinner. It's like, you owe those guys. And it's Easter weekend. You know, it's going to be packed with Leaf fans. At like do right. But, you know, going back to the whole thing of like, what's your like first impression going back to the week, it was quite legitimately like, one, don't expand the NHL, two, don't have a play-in tournament, three, wouldn't have been nice if you were playing this team in the first round of the playoffs. Like, we hear, you know, so many people talk about the Toronto Raptors because they won, right? And like, oh, you got to make a big trade like Kawhi. Who did they play in the first round? Orlando, who was awful, like awful. And it was like they won and they like everything quieted down and then they got into the hard series. But when I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but I basically whenever I've looked at it for teams that go to the Stanley Cup final, they always have like a five gamer. Like, you have to win a series in quick order. Like you can't go 6-7 for like four straight rounds. It's too hard. It's too much of a grind, right? Like, you look at Florida even last year, right? Like, they beat the Leafs in five.
Their five gamer, yeah.
Right? That was their five gamer. Like Vegas, I think it was five games against Winnipeg. I think the next round was also quick order, right? Like they had some really quick, tidy series. The playoffs are too hard now. The margins are too tight. I think even in the sense that we see guys coming in and out of the lineup and what those mental breaks do for them and like those opportunities to rest their bodies and how guys come out and play. Like, it's very telling. Like, you need some built-in breathers, and you can't be going to war with just to get to the conference finals. If you're going to seven-game back-to-back wars with Boston and Florida, you run out of gas. Like, 9 times out of 10, you run out of gas.
I mean, this is a big picture issue, and the Leafs have not come close to having to worry about that yet. But I get where you're coming from, and I mean, Washington is an abysmal team. In that game, you know, the Domi-Matthews combination was a little bit interesting because we're seeing Domi play well on the wing for the first time as a Maple Leaf. Like, there was an assumption that Domi has been terrible on the wing and he's much more effective at center. And there's the difficulty where if you put him at center, how is that line going to fare defensively? And if you put a wing, you're not going to get the best of him. And this was one of the first occasions, not the first, we've seen a couple times in recent weeks where you saw Domi on the wing with the level of engagement, with the level of impact that he had had at center. Now, I don't necessarily believe that it's going to be Domi, Matthews, Marner, although that is kind of intriguing just in the sense you have two sort of pure playmakers funneling it to the best goal scorer in the NHL. So there's definitely an interesting aspect of that. I still really like Bertuzzi and Matthews as a combination, but the idea that Domi and Matthews, or Domi, whether it's him coming to the second line where he started the season and that didn't really go anywhere, him playing a role that matters on the wing is becoming easier and easier to envision. And that is interesting because we've continually talked throughout the year about these, you know, middle six wingers, like support wingers, guys who are not in the core four but provide offense. And he is looking like a promising version of that. And it's showing that he doesn't necessarily have to be at center, although you could argue he's still that's still maybe the best option for the team. That was the kind of one takeaway from this particular game. We're going to get into the Brody of it all because, like, that's a big part of the story, and him sitting for that game is relevant. But that was my one kind of X's and O's takeaway. I get that, Washington does not put up the stiffest possible opposition to any offensive player.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Domi, I'll really just say, again, Washington's not good. We're going to get a much better indication of that in the weekend to come, because they're going to play Edmonton and Carolina, who are two top-end teams. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Domi, but amidst all that conversation about how it looked, Matthews was unbelievable in that game. Like, he was incredible. So, you know, like, you're already playing a team that's not that good. Matthews is like, he was amazing in that game.
With Matthews is not like a guarantee of success. Like, your boy Pontus Holmberg can play with Matthews and do nothing. Throw him totally under the bus. But like
night to night, it's not a guaranteed for success. But when he's playing that well, it pretty much is. I mean, he can carry a line on his own, I think. And again, like, it's Washington, so we'll see. But I some of this conversation about Matthews and Marner, first of all, something that happens in this market a lot, and I've just kind of seen it firsthand through us doing this site for so long, probably too long in our lives, is people always make it an either or, right? So it's like, oh, like Matthews and Marner, like it's not. And the reality is 100% Matthews is going to be better with Marner. Marner is an elite player. Of course, no shit. Of course, he's going to be better at hockey playing with an elite player who perfectly complements like each other's skill sets with the handedness matching like properly to boot, meaning like a lefty to righty on the right wing. Like it makes complete sense. Of course, they're going to be amazing at hockey together. They're two amazing players and they fit stylistically. But that's never, the question has always been, is the team greater than the sum of their parts if those guys are spread out across three lines, which is the thing we've argued about a million times. And I just kind of watching going, yes, Matthews is still an amazing player. And there's been like a weird, you know, it's like any game he doesn't score when Marner's been gone, it's like, oh, Matthews really misses Marner. It's like, well, okay, yes, like he does miss him in general, but like, let's not go crazy. He scored against Philly last week. When they played Carolina on the weekend, he hit the post. He had a chance all in the high slot by himself, right? Which, like, we've seen him score that goal. It was in the third period. It would have iced the game. It would have made it 5-2. And he missed, and then we know what happened. But, you know, he scored that chance legitimately all season. Like, I don't know if he's missed a more blatant, wide-open one-on-one chance with a goalie the entire year. So it's not like he didn't get chances. And then the Philly game, like, they produced. They should have scored more than the three goals, but, you know, he was very much creating and Philly couldn't really contain it. So all that to say is he's been good to me. I think the question you revert back to is really twofold. It's like, one, like, what's the best combination of which is best for the team, which is always the thing that bothers me, because sometimes it feels like they play Matthews and Marner together because, like, they're just two incredible players and they, like, get their kicks out of, like, you know, feeding off of each other and like the gaudy point totals. But it's not about like what's the best thing for winning hockey games in the playoffs, and I find that problematic. But then to your point, it's like, if Domi plays wing, which I think he's very much capable of doing, like, you could, again, we'll see on the weekend, but I think within reason you're going to sit there and go, yeah, like, Domi, Matthews, Bertuzzi could be a line, but I don't think they have the center depth to support that. Because, you know, I would be okay starting next season with Pontus Holberg at center. Like, he starts in October as a 3C, but I don't think you can shoehorn him into that 3C hole right here and now. I think if you go the David Kampf route, then you're going to have two checking lines. Like, right? Like, it's going to be like a Yarncroc, Kampf, McMahon type third line. And you're going to have a fourth line of like Dewar, Holmberg, and Reeves kind of thing, or Gregor, which might work in theory, but just understand, like, we're limiting the offense by way of doing that. Or do you spread out, you put Domi back at center, you have Marner alongside him, you know, some level of defensive conscience, you know, McMahon potentially.
Yeah, McMahon kind of makes thing, sense there, yeah.
Right? But And then what, like, is Matthews back with Bertuzzi and Yarncroc, we'll call it, kind of thing. Like, that was why I really wanted to see that line with Yarncroc there. Like, that was what I was looking forward to most, because to me, like, things kind of would have settled into place, because now we're seeing it with Domi and people are like, keep the line together. Like, you can't justify breaking it up. But I think you can quite easily when you look at the ramifications of putting that line together.
Yeah, it's like you say, the explanation in terms of Matthews struggles, and struggles is like such a loose term. Like, Matthews literally doesn't score and Marner is out of the lineup. It's like very easy for people to connect dot A to dot B. And it's funny because the sentiment around Mitch Marner has just changed by him not being there, right? Like, the power play has been struggling. And I'm not trying to say that he's not a big part of the power play success that they have, because he's very good on that special teams. And Matthews going through, again, what qualifies as a very small slump for any player.
He has 9 points in his last four games, by the way, Matthews. 9.
Yeah, I mean,
Like,
Wednesday night's is a huge part of that, but
but he has two, he had 4 points in three games going into that. Like, he hasn't been a bum.
no, he hasn't been a bum by any means. But when people see, I don't know how many games go by and he doesn't score a goal, it's very easy to reach for that explanation that like Marner is something that he needs. And the reality is, if you think about a player who's a top five player on the earth, who's a center, they don't need anything really. Like you could put him with two complete, like you could put him with Connor Dewar and Ryan Reeves, and you would probably have a decent level of success, arguably on both ends of the ice with that line.
That
I'm
was
not
it. That was
suggesting
a
it.
crazy take. That was a crazy take, but I hear like there's no limitations to Matthews' game. He's
Yeah, that's a,
huge. He's good defensively. He's strong. He can
th
skate. He
this
can
is not a
shoot.
good idea. I'm just saying that
Yeah.
like you can have a level of
Yeah.
success because if you have a player who's at, you know, and again, you know, Connor McDavid, you can put him with bums, like Nathan McKinnon, you can put like these guys who are the best of the best, and the Leafs kind of have to believe that Matthews is right there, or the whole Jenga tower falls apart. And I think it's true. Like I'm a pretty pro Matthews person. Not difficult to do. Not difficult to come out and say, I think Austin Matthews is really good, but I'm gonna go ahead and do it.
Great take, great
Great
take.
take. Yeah, huge take. So when there's any kind of stumble, it's easy. Like you said, it's so obvious that Matthews and Marner are good together. Like the
Yeah.
skill set is perfect. One of them is the purest of playmakers, one of them is the purest of goal scorers. And it's odd that one they're the center and the winger is not the way we generally see it. Like you generally see the playmaking center and the sniping winger, but it's a two-man game that anyone can understand. And so it's easy to say you need to have Marner there to maximize it. But as you say, it's about maximizing the entire team. And the idea of Marner and Domi, whether it's as two wingers with Matthews or whether it's a Domi Marner line and somebody else, like having two guys who pass whiz the puck around like that is really exciting potentially. And we just haven't seen that much of it. Pontus Holmberg at 3C is tough though. Like it really is. Like, he is someone who has performed adequately as a fourth center before. And I mean, I wouldn't even really go that far above adequately. And there's a very big difference between those jobs. Like, I know that sometimes David Kampf plays 4C in a way that ends up being more 3C-ish because he just gets fed so many defensive assignments that he sort of effectively becomes a third center. But if the Leafs want to have more than two lines that have any kind of skill, it's tough to do that without Domi down the middle. And part of their big problem when they go Matthews Marner is like that's a big concentration of defensive skill as well. So you have these squishy middle lines potentially that don't have a combination. It's the only line that would have a combination of offensive and defensive skill at a high level is one with Matthews and Marner together when you pair them that way. And so you'll have one line that's pure defensive. Dewar, Kampf, Reeves, Holmberg, whoever's on the other side of that. And then you have two other lines that are either going to be pure defense or pure offense. And that's a really tough way to play hockey when two of your four lines only really serve one role.
So let's look at Boston as an example, right? Because potential first round opponent. So their third line is right now it's Morgan Geekie, Trent Frederick, and Jacob Lacko. And to me, I think that they would look at like a Kamp, Yarncroc, McMahon line and go like, okay, like we'll go head to head with that third line versus third line. Like fans here might not think much of the Trent Frederick third line, although I think Trent Frederick's actually a really good player,
Yeah, I don't know. I
I'm a
think he's
big
pretty
I'm
good.
yeah, and Morgan Geekie's had a good year. But I'm saying, like, on name value, a lot of
Yeah,
fans
yeah,
are
yeah.
really gonna be like, yeah, okay. But Boston would be the same way. I don't think Boston would be like, oh man, like we're really worried about like Kampf and that 3C role. With like McMahon would have to black out and have the best like 2 weeks of his
And
life,
it's gonna happen, as
which
we all know.
yeah, like this
This
is a
is
Bobby McMahon podcast. But like that part aside, it's like there's not much to think about there for Boston. Like they'll roll the dice on that one just as much as the Leafs would. And now you're back to what it's always been, which is, are the top guys on the Leafs going to beat the top guys on Boston? And your guess is as good as mine. But if you create a third line, we'll call it third in nature, but I wouldn't necessarily call it third on paper, but it has Domi and Marner on it, and Marner going up against Trent Frederick, Morgan Geekie, and Jacob Lacko. Suddenly, Boston goes, oh shit, this is a problem. That's really what we're getting at here because they've tried this formula a million times over, which is Can our top guys go just head to head? And the reality is, like, that's ultimately what you need. And, like, that's why, amidst all the conversation we've talked about from the deadline, like, end of the day, we've said it like five episodes in a row. It's like, you scored two goals or less in five straight games against the Florida Panthers. Like, Barkov just absolutely blanked Matthews. You're not going to win. So basically the path is either you split them up and you try to create one, you know, matchup nightmare. Two, your top guys go head to head and they actually, you know, do this thing, like, God forbid, like, win the minutes. Just, like, I don't know, that's what good players are supposed to do. Or three, you create such a good checking line that, and this could work potentially, but, like, I'd be hesitant, but you have that third line essentially steal shifts against Pasternak's line or Marchand's line, and you create a little mismatch that way, but you're playing with fire, especially when your penalty kill can't kill a penalty.
Yeah, and I don't think their defensemen are good enough to do that. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to steal from their top players with that checking line, they have some of the fours to do it, but they don't really have elite defense. One, before we get to the defense and TJ Brody, one thing that I think is interesting too is the idea of how you can split it up, because when we were first talking about it, I was pretty adamant, to be honest, that Tavares was the guy who needed help. And I feel less that way now than I used to. I do think there are concepts where you can have Tavares without Marner or Nylander that work. And we've seen that over the last sort of 10, 15 games, that he's had a pretty high level of success at even strength with, you know, whether it's McMahon or Knies or things like that. And then you could have a Matthews Nylander line and a Domi Marner line, and then a Tavares, I don't know, whether it's Yarncroke, whether it's Knies, whether it's McMahon, type of line as well. And that would be a different way to do it. That is, it's just looked more plausible over the last, again, sort of 14, 15 games. You know, I think Tavares, about half of his even strength goals have come in a lot in that type of area since they started experimenting with him as a third line center. And I know that they didn't do that on Wednesday. And I think when, you know, kind of gun to his head, I'm not sure that it's a premise that Sheldon Keefe trusts or believes in, but yeah, like I said, I used to feel very strongly like the way Tavares was kind of aging and declining, like he absolutely needed the help of one of the other guys to make it work. And I'm not so sure that that's true anymore, as long as you conceive of his line as kind of the third group. And again, you throw them up against Boston's third group, and yeah, Tavares and a couple of these middle six wingers against Morgan Geeky and Trent Frederick, like, I think you do feel good about that as well.
I think it's somewhere in between. So I do think that Tavares needs the help, but I think the big difference is they actually just have better players to provide that help, right? Like, in a third line role anyway, he doesn't necessarily need like a Nylander type to like do everything for him in a, you know, to the, your point of like against like a Morgan Geeky type line, but he does need guys to go get the puck. He does need guys to help set the table. Like, he's good as an F2 on the forecheck. He's good as the second guy coming in to like pull pucks out of tight areas. And, you know, if like there's like a glimmer of getting the puck, like he'll get it. But like, he needs the first guy to go in there and like actually disrupt the play because he's not fast enough. But when you're playing with guys like Bobby McMahon and Cali Yarncroc, like they actually are good at that. And like it fits, like it meshes in a logical way, where it starts to come together. Whereas I think previously you were just often looking at guys going, yeah, this can't be a thing. Like, I think McMahon has the potential to be better offensively than someone like Noel Achari, who they were playing huge minutes. I think Noel Achari was a really good checker and played that grindy type game defensively that they really needed. And I really liked him. That he got way overpaid in the summer, but that's a different story. Someone who like doesn't get 20 points, but that part aside, like you couldn't play him with Noel Achari and be like, yeah, go produce. Like, that's not real. Like, Alex Kerfoot can't shoot. That's not real. Like, now you have McMahon and Yarncroc potentially. We're just saying those guys, but you could put Knives in there too. Like, all three of those guys can shoot. All three of those guys are disruptive on the forecheck. Like, all three of them can create offense all on their own. Like, if Knies has a step on someone, if McMahon has a step on someone, like, they're getting to the net. I don't view Yarncroc's game that way, but Yarncroc is just a really good pro. So like I think it's somewhere in between that. Like, yeah, like Tavares probably does need some, like he does need help, like he is getting older, but they actually just have better players to do that now. Like there's, we've talked about this a lot over the past month, like there's a legitimate level of depth developing. You know, like they're missing two really good players right now. Like Marner's obviously elite. And as much as we've like slagged, like, yeah, they should be able to survive without Yarncroc. Like he's a good NHLer. Like he's a top, like you put him on any team in the league, he is a top nine forward and he's out. And like they have guys like coming in and filling in roles. Like there's, you know, you look at the team when it's healthy and you look at the options, like good players are going to be sitting. If they're healthy in game one of the playoffs, like good players are going to be sitting on the bench.
For sure. Not maybe so much on the defensive side, but you know, and there'll be some guys in that are maybe a bit dubious. And that's where we come to TJ Brody, which having him healthy scratch, I know they kind of positioned it as a mental break, as it was, as if it was something for him. I don't know if he would have, I think he probably would have wanted to play if you'd asked. But he, you know, he's minus four in two games as we talked. I know minus four, whatever. But like we saw it with him and Riley on Tuesday night, like that kind of felt like, oh, you just can't even do this. Like not even in a pinch, not even in like, oh, it's something we have in our back pocket. It was like, okay, this is just not a thing that's viable. And his last 10 games, you know, you're talking shot share of 44.67%, expected goal rate again, 44.54, like consistently getting filled in. And for quite a while there was the idea, and I think, you know, we fed into this idea as well. I'm not saying it's like, oh, it's only idiots thought this, but there was an idea that, okay, we've got him from the right side to the left side, he's more comfortable, and now you don't have to worry about Brody, now you can build. Brody Liljegren was the one that we had for quite a while there, him and some other right shot defenseman. And we've reached a point now where that no longer feels like a safe assumption. It's not like, oh, just throw Brody on a pair with a right shot and you're good. Like, I don't know if you put, and maybe this will happen, but if you put Brody and Lyubushkin together, like I wouldn't feel confident in that pairing by any stretch of the imagination. And there's a lot of people talking about the Brody McCabe reunion and like, oh, they've switched sides now. And like, that's the Leafs' best chance of a shutdown pair. And confidence feels like it's eroding in that too. So I'll just ask sort of a simple question first, then we can get into it. Is like, where are you at with TJ Brody?
Yeah. I mean, you can't go back to the Riley Brody pairing. I don't think like if we're recording in the middle of the playoffs and like, God forbid they have a game where they do it and they get lit up. Like I'm just going to sit there and go like, what, like, where were they? Like you healthy scratched them after the last time it happened. Like the, like clearly like you see the problem, like it's like everyone does. It's just it's just not a viable pairing anymore. I don't think you could put it together in good faith. I mean, they're, you know, like I wrote something about it on Monday. It's like their defense is not good enough. Like that's very clear. Like it's cobbled together, you know, with popsicle sticks and glue and some a little bit like scotch tape, and they know that. And you saw Brad Treliving's comments this week, where, you know, he basically referenced a defense by committee approach. Like the only time you ever talk about defense by committee is when your defense is actually just not good enough. Like, I think he's well aware of that. Like, look at the Calgary defense that he left behind, which has now been picked apart. But the defense that he left behind was like, you give the Leafs that defense core. And this, I think this is the best team in the league with the defense that he left.
That's why they tried to trade for Tanev and Zadorov at the same time, right? Like, because they thought if you really import proper talent in bulk, like you can do something and change the paradigm of the whole team.
Yeah. So I think he's under like no disillusion that like this is not a good enough core. It's just whether they can do enough to just not actively boat anchor what is a, like, this is an elite forward group. Like, straight up, it is. Like, I know that there's holes. I know that there's things and we poke and prod at them and all that, but they're elite. Like, they score. They play teams all the time and they create chances at will. They score a ton of goals. They're one of the most electric teams in the league. When they get hot, it's, you know, you saw some teams come back with them and, you know, Philly and Vegas recently, where they were able to kind of like really commit to shot blocking and defense in the second game. But that was after the Leafs absolutely waxed both of them in the first game, right? Like The Leafs handed it to Philly, and then Philly responded. The Leafs handed it to Vegas. Vegas responded. Like, teams are finding out the hard way. Like, you cannot trade chances with this team. You cannot, like, shut them down. Like, you can limit them at best. The best thing to do is attack their defense and grind out games in the zone. It's just whether the defense on the Leafs end can do enough to, one, like, not be an insane liability, like, to, like, a crazy amount, and two, get the puck out enough, but cleanly. That's not just out, but cleanly out, where you have actual chances to turn up ice. And then three, like, whether the goaltending is going to be good enough to really mask some of the problems and some of the issues. I find their defense just really difficult to sort through in general. Like, they're going to need TJ Brody. Like, we can, I think everyone is aware of where his game is at right now. He's clearly on a decline. He's, you know, mid 30s. I don't think anyone is, like, you know, sitting here saying stud, and like, what a crazy decision to healthy scratch. I think everyone saw it and was like, yes, like, we see, like, yeah, we know. But the reality is, like, look at the group. You know, Simon Benoit comes back in, and I think he's had some good moments for sure. And he's thrown some hits, and I've liked his energy. And I actually think he's been a little bit more active in terms of, like, skating up ice and whatever. But it's like, they play Philly. He gets toe dragged by Scott Laudon, leading to that fourth goal. You know, look at some of the goals by Washington, like, fans on a puck. Like, this is the NHL. Like, you can't be fanning on a puck on the PK. Alex Ovechkin goal. You know, you skate into a line change, and you could tell
that was a brutal moment
for me. Yeah, and you could tell the forwards who were changing were like, "What the?" Like, you could see it on them going, what? Like, "What a joke!" And like, you can't do it. Like, I love Brody. We've talked so much about, or Benoit. Sorry, we've talked so much about him. Like, I'm not trying to, like, I'm not ripping on him. I'm just pointing out the realities of what's happened. Like, those are real things that he did. And it's like, once a game, it's like a gift at this point right now to me from him.
I think he's like a break glass in case of emergency type of guy. Like, when the playoffs roll around, it's like, if Brody gives you that game that's sort of truly horrendous, you're like, okay, we'll bring in this guy and he'll throw the body around and he'll try and be defensively responsible and maybe something goes wrong. But he can't be a plan A at this point. Like, he's not there yet. And like, I think he could be a, you know, future sixth defenseman for the Maple Leafs, and we'll see what happens with him in the longer term. And he's still developing, quote unquote, developing his game. I'm not sure he has some amazing ceiling or anything like that. But as you say, it's hard to say, okay, like, at the premise they need to use Brody is interesting and it's fair, I think. But then, like, you look at, what are you actually going to do? So you're probably going to have Riley and Lyubushkin, and then you're left with, you know, McCabe is going to be in there. And so then you're left with Brody, Liljegren, McCabe, Edmondson. And it's, so are you going to try and stick to Brody, McCabe, which just, it's never, there's really not a lot of proof of concept for it. And then is there an argument for Edmondson, McCabe, and then Brody, Liljegren trying to reignite that? Like, that might be your best idea. But the idea that Edmondson is going to be part of your big shutdown pair,
no.
Again, at this point in his career, I mean, you don't have a big shutdown pair. You just don't. But
it's just three pairs that you hope are respectable and are greater than the sum of their parts. Like, that's big. And like, we talk about the Benoit plays that resulted in goals. Like, how about Joel Edmondson? You know, Joseph Woll passes it tape to tape on his stick with like 10 seconds left in the first, and he just misses the puck, and Tom Wilson gets a chance all alone in the slot.
Oh yeah, that was a really rough. If they had scored there, that would have been discussed awful. A lot. But
yeah,
just he doesn't finish.
And like, when it happened live, because of the TV angle, I was like, oh, like, did Woll just like pass that like 3 feet in front of him? And they showed the replay behind the net. I was like, oh my God, that was like center stick. Like, that was like center blade. And like, I don't know, like, what did he, like, did he lift his stick? I've watched it like three times. Like, I don't know how he couldn't like handle this pass. That was right at him. Like, did Woll put too much heat on it for you? Like, what are we doing here? This NHL goalie that floated one to you in the corner with 10 seconds left. You're like a 6'5 NHL veteran of like 10 years. Like, what, like, what's going on? So I think with Edmondson, it's basically, I think you're pretty much like hoping for like a, almost like a Mark Stahl type situation, where going into the second round, I was like, the Leafs need to abuse Mark Stahl something fierce. Like, they need to just absolutely obliterate this guy. Like, he can't keep up. But then playoff prison rules come into play. And that is something Edmondson, like, we do have a proof of concept of that. Like, he does understand, like, the playoff, like, what he's going to get away with and how he's going to, you know, hook, hold, whatever, all that stuff. Like, I know it's not, like, the pretty things that people like to see, but I don't care. I am praying that that, like, plays out in a way where you're like, yeah, like, he, like, it's dirty and it's cheap and whatever. Like, I don't care. Like, they're playing the Boston Bruins or Florida Panthers in the first round. Like, you think they're not going to be cheap? You don't think they're going to, you know, hook and hold Matthews and Marner? You don't think they're going to give those guys shit? Like, you don't think, like, they're not going to get called for garbage? So you hope it kind of goes both ways and he plays to it. And I do think as, like, the series progresses, he'll become more effective because the game will shade more to that style of play. And it's just like, but still, even then, it's like probably as like a third pairing at best, like 19 minutes a night. And that's like going crazy at best.
But that whole stylistic shift that you described that I would agree with, it's also just doesn't really suit where Brody is, right? Like, Brody is not big. He's not that fast anymore, realistically. Like, you can go to his NHL edge, it'll tell you below average top speed. So he's not big. He's not fast. He's old. He's not aggressive. He's not particularly physical. And then I'm not saying that you have to be this ogre to succeed. Like, sometimes we get overly simplistic with assuming if guy is big, he will succeed in the NHL playoffs. I will say that helped me win NHL fantasy pool when I was in grade 7. I just picked all of the biggest guys, got Freddie Modin and Jerome Iginla, and it worked really well for me. But generally speaking, that's an oversimplification. That said, when I think of TJ Brody, especially the way he is playing now, it is hard for me to map his style of play onto a successful performance in the playoffs. It just is.
It's got to be a good first pass. It's got to be helping to spring things in transition. You know, it's like you look at the Carolina game on Saturday, like he made a really good play at the blue line to disrupt a 3-on-2 and then sends Tavares on a breakaway. Like that is the kind of thing you'll essentially look for. It's basically to the other side of it is he's not particularly aggressive. I don't want to say that he's like uncompetitive because that's not true. Like, he's in the NHL. Like, he's obviously competitive, but he's not like a hyper, like, he's not going to get by on a hyper competitiveness. He gets by because, you know, he's been a good skater his whole career. He's good with the puck. Like, he makes a good first pass. Like, he's a heady player. You know, he gets a stick in, you know, gets a stick in the right lanes, like that kind of thing. And in the playoffs, it becomes a lot more than that. It becomes, you know, like digging in the trenches, like ultra competitive battles in front of the net, like things of that nature, which are not, he's a little nonchalant, if we're being honest, like it in like, you know, he is like that. And I think sometimes, you know, as you look through his careers as a Leaf, like I wouldn't go back and say at any point, like he's had like an ultra successful playoffs. And like that was even when he was really good in the regular season.
Yeah, it's pretty hard for me to conjure like the great TJ Brody playoff moment as a Toronto Maple Leaf. And to be fair, we know the team we're talking about right now. There's a lot of guys you could say that about for the Maple Leafs in the last couple of years. But yeah, it is interesting because, you know, he's not going away, but it is just tricky to like, okay, he's with McCabe maybe, and that doesn't really work. Like, you drop him down with Liljegren. It's going to be tough because, you know, he's not easy to replace in the sense that, you know, he skates a lot of minutes. Keith trusts him a lot of situations, like
huge,
whether that's valid or not. And for a guy his age, like, it's pretty rare. Like, I was looking it up the other day and I think he was 7th or 8th in ice time for guys in his draft class, something like that. Like, they're just not a lot. And a lot of those guys are offensive superstars. Like, you're talking about Roman Josi's or Erik Karlsson's, I believe, are from the same draft year as he is. It's a different type of situation with him. And yeah, his path to redemption maybe sounds too dramatic, but like his path to redemption is foggy. It's not easy to see what that could look like.
The hard part too is they really need they need Liljegren to be a guy, right? Like you could feasibly Brody taking like third pairing, or shading towards that where it's like in the 4 to 5 territory, you could get there. Like you could squint and be like, yeah, I could see how that could work. But you need like Riley will be good in the playoffs. I will be very surprised if he is bad in the playoffs. He has not happened yet. Maybe this is the year, but until he proves otherwise, I will always assume and have tons of time for playoff Riley. And I'm hopeful for McCabe. He struggled last year in the playoffs. It was his first playoffs in the league. At times I thought his struggles were due to being like too like jacked up and antsy. Like he was going out of his way to hit guys, which don't get me wrong, like I enjoy it, but it was to a point where it was like detrimental. Where you're kind of watching going like, why did you killed that guy, but like you gave up a
At what
chance.
cost? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I imagine that will be toned down a little bit. Like he's a lot more settled this year, obviously. I think he just had his career high 7th goal, which is nice. Like he's a
He's having
player.
a really good season. He's
Yeah.
probably under-discussed how good a season he's had in the
Yeah.
midst of all this chaos going on the Leafs blue line.
Yeah. But then to all that to say is like if you had Liljegren like come in there and be the guy that like they're banking, like they're clearly banking on him, like they're begging this guy to like grab the reins and run with it, like they're begging him. And you know what, like to be honest, I think he's been pretty good for the past like week. You can like quibble with him or Riley on the power play, but by and large, like outside of that, like 5-on-5, like I think he's been solid. I just For him, you can't shake that he seems to get the yips and a little bit in big games and a little bit inopportune and the times that he decides to like lose his head or turn the puck over or whatever. And I think fans get fixated on that, and it's a little bit like can't see the forest through the trees, or like a little bit like too close to the puzzle. Because if you look at like most young defensemen who are not like elite, like we're not talking like the Cale Makars of the world, but if you just talk about like young NHL defensemen, they mess up. Like that's what they do, right? Like you
He's
go.
also he's got a very impressive skill set, and so I think he gets held to a standard, right? Like people love when Simon Benoit comes in and mucks it up and loses some fights and throws some hits and puts up some okay defensive numbers. And when Timothy Liljegren has his foibles, again, he's the former first round pick, and the expectations for him tend to be relatively high. And so when things go wrong, because people are aware of all the good thing he's capable of doing, when he falls short of his capabilities, he tends to be held to fire a little bit. Now, like you say, some of those yips, some of those in zone, like kind of baffling moments that you see, like those are there. It's not a myth, but it's also not all he is as a defenseman by any stretch of the imagination. Now, I'm not saying that to put it out there that I believe he's going to step up and have some huge playoffs, because he really has not shown that yet. But it's not something that can be ruled out either. I think some people have kind of dismissed him as someone who's like not built for this, can't do it, is going to be stuck as sort of like third line offensive, third not third third pair offensive minded, but a bit of a ceiling. And he hasn't proven that he's ready to go way above that, but he's still relatively young. He's still relatively experienced. And it is within the realm of possibility that he's capable of doing what they need him to do, to be honest, based on the quality of the rest of the defense corps. They need him to elevate his game. And it could happen. That doesn't mean it will, but I think there's a lot of fatalism when it comes to him as like, this is what he is, this is what he's capable of, and he's never going to be able to break through the ceiling. And some of that feels unfair.
He has all the tools, and he's, like you said, relatively inexperienced in the league. Like, he is a good skater. He's also strong. Like, I'm not saying he's overly tough or physical, but I'm saying, like, you see him go into battles and the way that he's able to lift guys and get inside them. Like, he is strong. Like, you can even see it when guys forecheck him and the way he's able to dip his shoulder and just drive through a forecheck and turn up ice. Like, he's a fire hydrant type guy. He doesn't really throw his weight around much, but he is a strong guy. He is a good skater. He is skilled. Like, he has pretty much all the, you know, sure. Would it be nice if he was like 6'3" or 6'4"? Of course. But by and large, you look at what he has to offer from a skill standpoint, and it's very much there. Like, the big problem has been some of those things like we're talking about. It's just like inopportune times to make mistakes, like brain farts, you know, fanning on pucks for no reason and giving pucks away up the middle, or like crumbling under forecheck pressure. And a lot of that stuff, which, you know, I know everyone wants to win right now and I get it, but like, you know, a lot of fixing these types of errors really just comes down to repetition and experience in the league. And he really doesn't have a ton of that, right? Like, it's not like he's been in the league for like 5 years. Been like, this is like his third full season. Like, he's never, I'm pretty sure this year is going to be the most games he's ever played in the NHL. So, like, when you put that all together, you're like, yeah, I could see this coming around. It'll be under, because he's at 40, he's only at 49. Like, his highest games in a season was last year at 67. So, you know, and then the year before that was 61. And then other than that, it was like a couple cups of coffee. So, you know, he hasn't even hit 200 games yet in the league. The general benchmark is 300 for defensemen. I know fans don't want to wait. I know fans are like, just get rid of these guys, like, whatever. But that's often how you get into like the Leafy territory of like decades past, when you would like look at guys and say, oh, like, that guy used to be on the Leafs, like, they shouldn't have gotten rid of him. Like, this is the time when you get rid of those guys, where then you go to look and say, like, you developed him, you took the lumps with him, and he's only hitting prime age now. Like, he turns 25 in April. And basically, what I think they're trying to figure out, which we're all trying to figure out, it's like, what's this guy going to be between 25 and 30? Because he does, again, have all that skill set to be a really good NHL defenseman. Is he going to like put it together and smooth out some of these issues that we're seeing and have a really good run here of like 4 or 5 years, which would really help the team? Like, it would be a significant thing. So you might have to eat it a little bit this year, but I think you've just been saying this now for months here. Like, I think you just do it and you see how it plays out and you gather all the info and you make a decision in the off season. And it's not ideal. Like, there's nothing we're going to do and say about the defense that's going to make it ideal. Like, it's not ideal. It's like, can they cobble it together? Can Ilya Samsonov or Joseph Woll be excellent? And can their forwards actually score? Like, they have
Yeah.
four lines.
I want to be in the Liljegren business if I'm the Leafs. You know what I mean? Like, last 3 years, he's gone from a guy who's playing 16 minutes a night, and each year since then, he's added about a minute and a half. Like, he's closing in on that 20. He's getting a little bit more run on the power play. We're seeing what that could look like. The returns are not super impressive, but they're not hopeless either. Like, you could envision him succeeding there. He's doing more offensively. Like, his on ice numbers are pretty solid. He's been injured. He's had a lot of different partners. Like, I would consider 2023, 2024 to be a step forward for Liljegren, not a profound one, not one that gives a sense of security that he's going to be someone you build around the top four for the future. Like you said, that's what people want. They want the sense of certainty, and they're just not going to get it yet. But if I'm rolling this dice, like, if I'm, I don't know, if I was another team and I had a sense that Treliving didn't like Liljegren, like, I would be interested in going and getting this guy, because a right shot defenseman with his tools really do not grow on trees by any stretch of the imagination. And there's a difference between him and the Connor Timmins of the world, who are pure tools. Like, he's also has some level of accomplishment that he can stand on as well. And again, he's not someone
Timmins
that
looked good against
he did look
Washington.
good.
Like, he did
I was
look
like, I
good.
don't know how much podcast time I want to give over to giving flowers to Connor Timmins, but he did look nice on Wednesday.
I've liked Timmins, and I advocated for him in the summer. And the thing that I've always pointed to is really just like, he can't get out of his own way. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's a bad bounce. You got mono, but
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to blame him for
it's like, one, like, be careful. Two,
that.
use your brain. And three, like, you, like, those are the opportunities you need to seize. Like, that was a perfect opportunity for him to be in the lineup for like 3 weeks given all the other injuries and uncertainty and the Morgan Riley suspension and like all this crap, like you could have been in there and been a guy and given them no choice. And instead it's like, you barely playing, but now you have this good game against Washington. And like, I would play him again on Saturday.
I'm interested like, to see more. I like he, that made me want to see more. The thing about the end of the season though, and this, I want to get to goaltending very briefly before we finish this, but is there enough time for you to figure some of these things out, right? Like, is there enough runway for Connor Timmins to be like, you know what? I have something to show you before the playoffs. Is there enough runway for Joseph Woll to put himself in a position to start game one? And we're getting to the point where like time is running out. Like, it is difficult to make a big paradigm shift as a player in terms of how your coach sees you and the amount of time the Maple Leafs have left. Now they have the luxury of being in this weird chunk of the standings that no one else resides in, so they can be more experimental than other teams. But especially when it comes to the crease, like it feels like it's Samsonov's crease, because it just doesn't feel like there'd be time for Woll to steal it with them having to give both goalies some starts, and the way they've lent towards Samsonov when you thought there would be maybe more of an even split.
I would say that it might not necessarily be a matter of enough time to get in for game one, but there's definitely enough time for you to make it a conversation starting game two, should there be a mediocre game one, right? Like if Woll, let's say, is excellent down the stretch here and Samsonov continues being excellent, you're going to start Samsonov. But then if Samsonov is bad in game one, I think you'll see a lot of conversation that's like, do you go to Woll? And they probably won't. They probably would stick with Samsonov for at least one more and then switch. But if Woll is not good down the stretch and Samsonov continues to be good and Samsonov is not good in game one, there's no planet where you're going to sit there and be like, well, yeah, now you should turn to Joseph Woll. Everyone's going to be like, we saw what Joseph Woll just did for the past 3 weeks. Like, Samsonov better figure it out kind of thing. So same thing with Timmins. Like, it might not, where I think it gets particularly interesting with Timmins is that he is right-handed, and the Leafs are definitely putting a bit more of a premium on that, which I like. I do think handedness is important. We've talked about it a ton. Like, you cannot get around how much easier it is to play on your strong side. Like, that's just the reality of the sport. Like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Like, not everything needs to be like a Moneyball type referendum on like what works and what doesn't. Like, that's the reality. Like, it's easier to play on your strong side. It's like, this, you know, we're not making anything up here. And him being a right-handed player gives him a chance. Like, it genuinely does give him a chance. I think the other thing that I'll say, and this is where Timothy Liljegren does come into play, like, obviously Timothy Liljegren would have to be good. Like, Timothy Liljegren would have to be really good in order to help also facilitate Timmins taking a run at it. Like, you can't, like, they
for
both
sure.
Can't
Timmigren,
be
Timmigren. Liljegren and McCabe would have to be believable second pair.
Yeah, but like,
in use Timmins
in theory, like, you could get there, but like, it would be, you couldn't have like two right-handed defensemen where you're like, ah, like, they're skilled and they're good with the puck, but like, we're terrified of both of them in our own zone.
And
like,
your other one's Labushkin.
Yeah, like, you can't. Things,
that's tough.
Yeah, yeah, you obviously can't. So, like, to me, part of Timmins is actually like part of Liljegren. Like, he should be buying this guy steak dinners like every night, just being like, how can I, you know, like, do you need a massage? Like, how do I help you feel good about yourself and like bleed it in from there kind of thing. But the other thing I'll say about Timmins, which we saw, is he, like, and I think everyone already knows this anyways, is he does have a good shot. Like, it's not even necessarily about being a bomb. Like, he's just good at getting the puck through traffic. And we saw it last night. He should have gotten an assist. Like, he would have if that Matthews hat trick goal counted. And he had a few nice plays from the point. Like, he brings something where, you know, like, Benoit's obviously not doing that. Labushkin's obviously not doing that. Brody's obviously not doing that. I think McCabe has a good shot with like a little bit of space. Like, he'll one time the puck. Like, the goal off of John Tavares against the Habs a few weeks ago comes to mind, like that kind of play. But I'm not looking at McCabe saying this guy will sift one through legs. The only guys that I think can do that are Riley and to some degree Liljegren, and then to some degree Timmins. And like, if you think back to the Philly game this week, like, I was rewatching the end of the game, and because I'm a loser, and I was like, I can't believe Matthews didn't shoot. Like, they did get possession. Like, they did have possession in the offensive zone. when they made it a one goal game again, and they set it up, and you could tell like the amount of traffic around them was really like causing them to not shoot or not make the plays that they wanted to. And sometimes you just need a guy that can get a shot through traffic. And I think Timmons can. So like that is a skill, especially in playoffs when teams are selling out like crazy. Like you saw like Scott Laughton, you saw like Ryan Poling, like that is what happens in the playoffs. Guys are going to put their bodies on the line. Like guys are going all out. Like you need guys that can get pucks through. That's why Riley was so effective last year.
How many goals against the Lightning were long shots that they're putting through and creating something off of, whether it's a tip or a rebound? Like that was effectively their offense in that series.
Yeah, like you need that ability. So I do think that Timmons gets somewhat interesting in that category if he can string it together. Now, the downsides with Timmons are one, like he's barely played. Two, like he has no real track record in the league. Three, I'm not sold on him defensively. And four, I'm not sure he can handle a forecheck very well against like an actual hockey team. But sure, like give him the games this weekend. Give him Edmonton on Saturday and let's see how it goes. And if he plays well again, give him Carolina on Sunday. And if he plays well again, like he keeps going. Like no one on the defense, like you can't sit there and say anyone has a stranglehold on a spot other than basically like McCabe and Riley. Like anyone else you could convince me to take out of the lineup with like very little conversation.
Yeah, like Timmons, one thing I like about him is he seems like a bit of an irrational confidence guy. Like it's more of an NBA term you use for sort of a sixth man who just comes off the bench and just shoots.
Like you're not actually good, but you play like you're good.
But like, yeah, he'll get healthy scratch for like weeks or months at a time, and he'll come out and he'll look for a shot and he'll make aggressive plays to create in the zone. And I think, you know, there's a world where someone could have that type of trajectory and then they finally get a game and they're tense and they're like trying to not make a mistake and trying to make sure they don't do that one thing that costs them their next chance at playing. And it doesn't seem like he feels like he plays loose, sometimes that's not what you want. But I do like the fact that he's able to play aggressively kind of regardless of the context.
But he needs to have some good games against some good teams. And I'm kind of like that with some other guys too. Like, right, we started the podcast talking about Domi. I even look at like Bobby McMahon. I was looking at like his goals and stuff. It's like you had a hat trick against St. Louis. They suck. You scored against Anaheim. They suck. You scored against Washington. They suck. You need to play well against good teams. Like when they played Boston back, you know, he scored against the Habs. They suck. They played Boston back to back. Like I barely noticed him. Like that's the next step for him. And that's fair. Like he doesn't have much track record in the league. You know, he's not young, but he's young to the NHL. Right. And I saw Brad Treliving made the comment, or it was like, you know, the emergence, I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically like the emergence of Bobby McMahon as like a new player. And I kind of look like a trade deadline acquisition kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, if he can actually do it against good teams. Like, we haven't seen him play well, in my estimation, against good hockey teams. I think we've seen him play well and really carry the mail for them when the other, you know, the stars are like not really at their best or bringing the heat against the top teams, or sorry, against weak teams. But like, in order for him to be a guy, like, he's got to do it against like actual good hockey teams. Like, that's the natural step for him. It's like, same thing with Pontus Holmberg. It's like, cool. Like you scored a one-handed goal against San Jose, but like, let's see you play well against like an actual good hockey team and not look out of your depth. I think Matthew Knies is very much in that boat. Connor Timmins obviously is in that boat. And that's when teams end up going back to veterans, because those guys are a little bit more battle-tested. They understand the ebbs and flows of it and, you know, how to survive shifts. It's like, you go back to Matthew Knies against Washington, he takes the penalty and then Benoit fans on it and they score. But like that penalty never should have happened. Like you got to get the puck out there. Like that, just in a crazy sequence of events. Like you watch that play six times over and you have no idea why he did what he did. And like, he's got to learn I have nothing here. Like put it off the glass and out. Like it is what it is. Like sometimes you just have to, it's not what people want to see and it's not what people want to hear, but sometimes you just have to say like, we live to fight another day. And instead he's like, I'm going to curl back in my own zone as like the last man back. And then I'm going to take a penalty and then I'm going to be confused when the ref calls it. And then they score. So they have a bunch of these guys. And then it's funny when you say that, because like, their top guys also need to prove that they can do it against good teams in the playoffs because they haven't done it either.
That's a whole other category. No, I know what you mean, but that's a whole other category. Like, at least those guys have done it against good teams in the regular season, had their moments in the playoffs. Yeah. I think Marner led round one in points last year, et cetera, et cetera. No, I think what's kind of fun about the Leafs right now is it's all a science experiment. Like, the wins and losses, barring something catastrophic, don't really matter right now. So if you're a really kind of, I don't know, locked in Leafs fan, this is sort of a fun time to see what they try, how those things work. And it's something that a lot of teams don't really have the luxury of doing, because if you're at the top, chances are you're in a division battle. And if you're at the bottom, chances are you're fighting for your playoff life. And they're in this weird spot. Again, would you rather win the division? Absolutely. But seeing as you are where you are, you have a lot of players that you can test in various different situations and combinations. And so for people like us who are, you know, talking about writing about the Leafs, like, it is a lot of fun. And hopefully for the type of people who are listening to this podcast, which I would have to assume would be people who are a little bit more plugged in, like, it gives a little bit of meaning to a time of year that sometimes doesn't have it if you're in this type of competitive situation. Now, would you prefer a situation for the Leafs where they've got four absolutely locked in lines and three D pairs and it all works and you feel confident about your goalie and you feel like you got a great chance to win the Stanley Cup? Sure. That's not where the Leafs are, though. So, like, this is the fun part about watching the Leafs right now. And I do think that we are out of time, so I'm going to end on that quasi-positive note there. Do you want to add anything just before we go?
Yeah, I'll just build off that point as we wrap up here. It's really to say you cannot replicate, and you can't, the required level of desperation of a team that's battling for their life. And to me, like, when Riley got suspended, they were like, the playoffs were legitimately, I always thought they were going to make it, and it would have been hard for me to believe that Matthews and Marner and Nylander wouldn't have, like, dragged them there by, like, their carcass if they had to, because they're just too good in the regular season. But, like, it was legitimate in question, and you saw them go on a streak that essentially, like, ended all of that conversation, and now they're comfortably in. Like, you cannot replicate that level of desperation from a team standpoint, but you can absolutely have guys fighting for their lives just to get into the lineup. And to me, that's, like, why I look at someone like Noah Gregor and I struggle, because he's getting into some games and it's like, you're not going out there and going 150 to, like, I'm not saying he's dogging it, I'm not saying he's not working hard, but you aren't doing anything exceptional that says I'm not coming out of the lineup again. Like, you've healthy scratched me a few times and I don't like it, and I'm going to show you that I don't like it. At least I can, like, Benoit's had his turnovers, but I'm also watching him go out there and, like, he's throwing his body around. Like, he's trying to impact games within the skill set that he has available to him. And he's trying to dig in. Like, I think he needs to avoid the mistakes that we flagged, but I can at least see a guy going out there and, like, giving it to try to, you know, give the team no choice. All that to say is, like, guys should be fighting for their playoff, like, Pontus Holmberg might not get into the playoffs to start. Like, he's fighting for his playoff life. I know
that'll be devastating for you.
It will be. But, like, to, you know, in fairness, like, what has he done lately? You know, it's like, you look at Nick Robertson, like, yeah, he comes in, he scores the goal against Carolina, and then he has the game, like, the games against Philly and Washington, where I'm like, you're making this easy on them. You're not give, like, they'll easily healthy scratch you if you keep this up for come playoff time. Like, no one's going to be sitting there going, wow, like, Robertson really gave us no choice based on the last two games. Like, it's one thing to come in hot and have a night after you've been scratched. It's another to just keep doing it night after night after night. So that's got to be the motivation here. It's like, I know we want to see the line set, and I think that needs to happen at some point. We'll probably talk about that next week as this continues on, but, like, guys got to show some desperation here. It's about getting in, like, making the playoffs first and foremost. It's not officially clinched, but then after that, it's like, who wants to be in the lineup, like, game one, Toronto Maple Leaf hockey in the playoffs?
All right, we will leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. We appreciate that. We love if you leave ratings and reviews. There's been a downtick in reviews lately, which makes us sad. Tell everyone you know about the podcast, and we will talk to you again soon.
Everyone is looking at me. Time is running and we're down by three. Look inside yourself, what do you see? The pain is in your mind, no, nothing stops me. Everyone is looking at me. How does
myself, I know what I see. Do you have the guts to